Bridge Magazine, the online news service of the Center for Michigan, has been examining teacher preparation in the state. Its series of stories finds many problems with the way that teachers are trained and evaluated. Bridge Magazine senior writer Ron French reported the series, and he joins us. Ron, thank you for being with us.
I'm happy to be here.
So what are some of the basic problems with teacher preparation in Michigan?
The problems that Michigan faces are really symptomatic of problems faced in many states in the nation. We have a system that was established virtually 100 years ago that was based on a system where education was not as important to getting a good career. And second, there was an assumption that teachers were going to be teaching for a few years and then would leave to get married because almost all teachers at that time were women. And also, it was not as much of a problem back then because there were so few jobs that the smartest, most talented women could achieve, in their careers. There was times when almost your best, brightest women college students would go into teaching because there were so other fewer choices. Well, now there are a lot more choices, but the system is not adjusted to the fact that the world has changed around us.
But one thing your series does find is that there are many teachers for whom this is a pretty short career. They're just doing this for a couple years and then moving on. Why is that?
The churn is something that is very specific to teaching that you don't see in a lot of other careers. If you become an attorney, generally you stay an attorney. If you become a journalist, often you stay you're a journalist for a number of years or in a related field. In teaching, what you find is that you go through college for 4 years, and 40% of teachers spend fewer years in the classroom teaching than they did in the classroom learning to be a teacher. 40% leave the profession within 4 years. 10% leave in the first year. And you find several reasons for that. One is that teacher preparation programs really preparing teachers for the reality of the classroom. When you talk to superintendents and principals and veteran teachers, they say that we get these teachers out of school and then we teach them how to teach once they get out. And is that really a system we want to do? Because so you get teachers who really aren't prepared for what it's really like in a classroom. And second, we do not have a system that really supports young teachers and mentors them like we do young doctors. There's no internship program where you are supervised. Basically, the first day in your classroom, you're expected to do the same thing that you do after 30 years. And not everyone's going to survive that. And the problem that creates, Gordon, in the long run is because a lot of these teachers leave, you keep hiring more new teachers. Well, sure, there's plenty of new teachers out there. You don't have empty classrooms without teachers. But the problem is that you really, statistics will show that you really aren't a veteran teacher who can get the most learning, the most academic achievement out of your kids until you reach about 5 years. And so what you have are a lot of classrooms where students aren't learning as much as they might because their teachers just don't have the experience to know how to do it.
And to go back to what you were talking about there about teaching teachers how to teach, is part of the complexity here that teachers have to know their subject matter. But then there's another component of this, which is knowing how to manage a classroom, how to run a classroom.
That's a huge factor, Gordon. And you see that brought up over and over again, both by young teachers, by superintendents, and even by the teacher preparation programs. They know that's an area that we have to figure out how to address. How do you take a student in college and not only teach them the basics of math or chemistry or literature, whatever they're going to end up teaching, but how do you teach them to actually get in front of 30 second graders and keep their attention? There are teachers who just come out of there and get eaten alive. How do you teach that? Well, one of the things that Michigan has struggled with is finding ways to get potential teachers while they're still in college into real classrooms more and get them into classrooms at a younger age. The standard student teaching model, that standard model is 12 weeks in a real classroom, and then, okay, hey, now you can be a real teacher. That's often shown not to be adequate, and that doesn't happen until you're a senior in college. By that time, if you figure out that, hey, this really isn't for me, I've wasted 4 years of my life trying to do this. So is there a way that we can adjust the system so that starting in your freshman year, starting in your sophomore year in college, you are in real classrooms more so that you get a sense, one, whether it's a career you can really do, and two, what are the challenges, so you can go back to your professors and say, you know, I saw this in class yesterday, and I didn't know how to handle it. What should I do? So those are things that we have to figure out how to address.
Is the quality of teaching more likely to be a problem in schools where the students come from poorer families?
That's an interesting question, and it raises all sorts of red flags for us. The fact is that the majority of our youngest teachers with the least amount of experience are teaching in the poorest schools. Now, you can look at it in several ways. One, just like anyone else, if you or I have a lot of experience in our job, we're going to try to live and work in the best communities, you know, that we can. And so it's tough to keep someone with a lot of experience in a Pontiac, in an Inkster, in a Saginaw. They're going to want to move to the suburbs just like you or I would oftentimes. But the problem that creates is that the schools where the students need the teachers with the most experience are the schools where the students are least likely to find those teachers. In fact, some of the charter schools in inner city areas, charter schools, 53% of teachers have 1 year of experience or less. And that has nothing to do, I think, with them being charter schools or non-charter schools. It has to do with the most of them are located in cities. And so how do you handle that? In fact, it creates a widening achievement gap instead of closing the achievement gap.
One of your stories gets into the whole question of how we know which colleges and universities produce the most effective teachers. And right now, that's pretty hazy, isn't it?
It's incredible. When you think of all the information that you have on the internet now, how you can look online and you can see formal ratings for colleges. You know exactly where Michigan State is ranked in football or basketball. But how do you know how these university education programs are rated in an area that is so much more important, frankly, for our future than football or basketball? Well, there are systems out there that rate them, but they're all over the board. The state of Michigan has a system that is rating education preparation programs, and it's going to be beefed up in years. But at the moment, the way the system is set up, the top-rated college preparation program is also the program that has the lowest teacher certification pass rate and whose students have one of the lowest ACTs averages coming into college. So there's something wrong with the system there. And the reason that is so important is that if you or I are a parent, we want our kids to be in the classrooms of the smartest, brightest teachers. And if you have some education preparation programs where you have students coming in with an ACT twice as high as potential teachers in other universities, that may say something. Are we as customers of the education system supposed to know that? And for that matter, how are schools who are hiring these teachers supposed to know that? That's an important thing to know. So that is something the state is trying to address now. It's going to be a few years, and it's going to involve a lot more of the teacher evaluation system that's now coming into place. That's going to help a lot.
Aren't there some real problems with getting our arms around the facts and figures, though? For one thing, as pointed out in your story, Michigan graduates many teachers who then go and work in other states. And tracking them and determining whether or not they're effective teachers can be difficult. So I guess, aren't there a lot of moving parts here to try and bring together in one place to figure out who is graduating effective teachers?
You've hit the nail on the head there, and that's a concern. And as far as like the teachers who are teaching in other states, it's something that Michigan has no control over. We can't tell the other states that we need you to send us information back on how these teachers are doing. You can send out surveys to the teachers themselves, say, and ask them, hey, how effective do you think you are? But that's virtually meaningless. So you've got that problem to face. But the fact is, if we have a teacher evaluation system where there is a component in that evaluation system that involves student learning, okay, whether that's in testing or whatever, and that is able to be linked back to the teacher preparation programs, you'll at least know how the teachers are doing who stayed in state. And that's going to give you some idea, a pretty good, a much better idea than we have now about how these teacher preparation programs are working.
You wrote a story about Godwin Heights, which is here on the west side of the state. And they have a very rigorous program for determining who teaches there and who stays on as a teacher. Sometimes they remove them. Is that an example that the rest of the state can follow, or is that such a perhaps a smaller district where they can do that there, but you really can't take that out statewide or beyond?
I'm not sure if you could scale that up statewide. You find individual districts that are very good and other districts that are very poor at finding good teachers. Godwin Heights is small enough, and it's all about individuals. The individual leadership in that district has chosen to spend a lot of time and a lot of effort on teacher quality, and they're, you know, real taskmasters about it. And it's like you either cut it or you're out of here. And as the principal at Godwin Heights North Elementary told me, she said, "Look, it's not about, you know, I love my teachers, but it's not about making sure they're comfortable. It's about making sure that the students are learning them as much as they can. You know, these are students who have a lot of things stacked against them. They're growing up in lower income and lower middle income families, and many of them are first generation Americans. And these are kids who often don't succeed in school. And as the principal at that elementary told me, says we can't fail these kids. One or two bad teachers in a row, and these kids aren't going to make it out of high school, let alone college. And so it's imperative on us to do whatever we have to make sure these kids succeed. If that means letting a few teachers go and trying to find better ones, we're going to do it."
You mentioned that the state is making some changes. What are some other possible solutions here that are being part of pilot projects, maybe not just here in Michigan, but across the country, to try and get the best quality teachers into the classroom?
Sure. Several states are doing different things. Some states are looking at admission standards to teacher preparation programs. Some states are saying you can't get into a teacher preparation program unless you have at least a 3.0 grade point average. Some states, such as Illinois, very near here, have really beefed up their certification tests, which are the tests that you take after you get out of college that you have to pass to be able to get certified as a teacher. In Michigan, the pass rates are about in the high 80s, which are it's the same percent of people pass those as pass the certification test for cosmetology. Okay. Illinois, they beefed up their certification tests, and the pass rates dropped from the high 80s to the low 50s. So, you know, because Illinois took a position, says maybe if we have a gate there that we're only going to let only the best students out of college into the teaching profession, maybe that's how we handle it. Right across the river from Detroit in Windsor and Ontario, they have more of an internship program once you get out of teaching preparation programs, where you are what we call a substitute teacher for 4 or 5 years before you are allowed to apply to be a full-time teacher in a classroom. So first-year teachers in Ontario often are 28 years old as opposed to 22 or 23. There are a lot of things that can be done, and a lot of things are being considered. And I can tell you this is a hot topic in Lansing. I think you are going to see some changes here in the next year or two.
But I also want to note something you wrote in one of your stories about that, yes, teacher quality is important. However, you also noted studies show that factors outside of school actually play a larger role in student test scores than teachers. I'm wondering, going back to what we talked about earlier about the teachers who don't make it very long in the classroom, is that part of the problem here, that there's a lot of pressure on them, and yet most of these teachers have to know that part of what they're trying to do is out of their control?
You know, being a teacher today in Michigan is a lot like being a college football coach. If you start losing, you get all the blame. And if your students are not achieving, or you're in a district where the standardized test scores are low, as a teacher, you get the blame. And there's a lot of pressure on teachers, and a lot of teachers just don't like the fact that they are blamed for things that to some extent are outside their control. Data will show, no one questions this, that the majority of student achievement is based on factors outside of the classroom. It's your parents' education, it's your parents' income, all sorts of factors like that. But within the school walls, the biggest factor is the quality of teaching. And so if we are working in a system where we're not likely to say the way to improve education is to actually find a way to increase incomes, that's just something I don't think is going to happen in Lansing. If you're working in a system that says that the only thing we can do is try to work within the classroom walls, what can we do? What's the biggest factor we can sort of leverage here? It is teacher quality. So how can we give teachers the levers they need to actually move the system here? And that's what we're trying to do with looking at teacher preparation.
Is there some way in the evaluation to take into account the fact that some teachers are handling classrooms which have a more difficult population to teach? Perhaps they come from poorer families. The statistic we always hear about who gets free or reduced lunch. Is there a way to factor that into the equation that gives us an idea, perhaps, of teacher quality?
There absolutely is, Gordon, and that's something that has to happen in the new teacher evaluation system that's being considered. What's going to happen there is you're going to see some raw scores. Here are the raw test scores for Bloomfield Hills and Godwin Heights and Grand Rapids, and you're going to see Bloomfield Hills scores being higher. You know, there's a shock. No one's going to be surprised by that. But what you have to do then is look at the students that the teachers have and say how much growth they've had. Where were the students when the teachers got hold of them in September, and where were they when they left the classroom the following June? You know, did they achieve a year's worth of growth? And you look at poverty. Do you take that into account? Do you take into account the percent of students in the classroom who are learning disabled? Some of the poor school districts have a higher percentage of learning disabled, and they take the same tests. And so, you know, should the teachers be held responsible for that? Also, in poorer districts, students are more mobile. They move from school to school and district more often. If a student moves into my classroom as a teacher in February, and this test is going to determine whether I keep my job, is in May, am I responsible for that kid who I've only had for 2 months as opposed to someone who had for 8 months? You know, these are all things that have to be taken, and that's why it's taking so long. Everyone's trying to figure out these formulas, and I'll guarantee you, Gordon, it's going to be a complicated formula, and it will be tweaked over the years, but absolutely, we have to take into account the fact that a teacher in Grand Rapids is not going to their kids are not going to have the same standardized test scores as the teacher of students in East Grand Rapids. You know, and so you have to take that into account somewhere.
Ron French, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Ron French is senior writer for Bridge Magazine.